This show was previously broadcast live on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Welcome to Godspeed, an enlightening and positive forum exploring the world's religions and spiritual practices in an effort to better understand each other, promote tolerance, and foster human unity. Through conversations with experts worldwide, this program is an on-air classroom aimed at helping listeners gain insight into religious and spiritual practices around the world. I'm your host, Carol Hollenbeck. Like other Americans, I first heard of the Baha'i through the music of Seals and Crofts, practitioners of the faith. I was about 9 or 10 years old when I heard one of their popular albums. And although Seals and Crofts are best known for songs including Summer Breeze, Diamond Girl, and perhaps We May Never Pass This Way Again, it was a short, haunting piece that remained in my mind from the album. The song was called Hollow Reed. The lyrics include these lines: "Make me as a hollow reed that I may play and plant thy seed. Rascal's closet may be lit and have a needy rhyme in it. Make me as a flute of stone, that when I play thy wind is blown. Make me as a hollow reed, that I may sing your grace, my steed. Make me as a hollow reed, so I may give them what they need." As a child, I turned the album cover over and found in the lower right-hand corner where to go to find out more of the Baha'i Faith. Dr. James Sacco is here with us today to share about the Baha'i Faith in America and around the world. Dr. Sacco is the co-administrator of the Greenacre Baha'i School, Retreat, and Conference Center in Elliott, Maine. He is a Harvard College graduate who majored in government and social relations. He also holds a doctorate from the University of Massachusetts School of Education. Dr. Sacco spent 18 years in Brazil as a Baha'i pioneer, where he was also an educational consultant and a teacher and principal at the Pan American School of Porto Alegre, Brazil. He was also co-founder and executive director of the School of the Nations in Brasilia, Brazil. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Carol.
Jim, I would not actually meet the Baha'i until much later in my life as an adult. I was a Catholic theologian at a Catholic university delivering a theology paper on the relationship of faith and the space sciences at a conference on religion and science. And there I was in this gray conference center talking to a sea of subdued professors in gray suits. You get the image. And in the audience to my left was a group of very colorful people in bright, colorful clothes with huge smiles on their faces. And after the presentation, they said, "We must have lunch," where they identified themselves as members of the Baha'i Faith. And this conversation was, to me, a highlight of that conference weekend. Even as members of different faiths, I found a commonality in the theme of emptying oneself out, as in the hollow reed image, with other spiritual beliefs in the world, including Franciscan spirituality, Buddhism, and others. Is that a surprise?
No, Carol, it's not a surprise. This whole, you know, concept of emptying oneself of all human learning, of turning one's heart and soul to God, and really striving to achieve that station of being an instrument of God's peace, an instrument of God's love, you know, that's a very essential, you know, Baha'i concept as well. So, you know, it's not a surprise to me, and, you know, I think you were perhaps, you know, when you heard that beautiful prayer, "Make me a hollow reed," you know, that expresses that whole idea of what we call detachment, or, in other words, meaning being aware, constantly aware of the spiritual world, and of the, you know, the essential love of God, which is really our the purpose of our being. You know.
Yes, it planted a seed in me, and it stayed.
The Baha'i faith, is, although it's called a new religion, is not a new religion, but perhaps a religion renewed?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How would you share that with us?
The whole concept of religion, as taught by Baha'u'llah, the prophet founder of the Baha'i faith, is that religion is one reality, and that the divine message is delivered to mankind through divine messengers at different periods in history. The divine messenger, whether it be Muhammad or Buddha or Jesus, delivers the same spiritual truth that is the essence of all religions, and then updates or brings a new social teaching, new laws, which will bring humanity to a new level of both spiritual and material civilization. So the concept of, you know, as a Baha'i, I believe in Moses, I believe in Buddha, I believe in Jesus, I believe in Muhammad, and I also believe in these latest divine messengers, the Bab and Baha'u'llah.
Can you tell me a little bit of the origin of the faith and the founder and the timing in history place?
Right. In 1844 in Persia, which is today Iran, the Bab was found by one of a group of people who were seeking, throughout Persia for, from their understanding of the Quran, from their understanding from their teachers, that this was the time, 1844, of the coming of a new messenger of God. And so they discovered the Bab, which is a term in Arabic which means the gate of God. He was a John the Baptist figure who prepared people for the coming of Baha'u'llah, who came after the Bab, and said that this, proclaimed a new faith, but in that sense of a renewal of faith, you know, going back to what I like to refer to as the essence of Islam, the essence of Christianity, renewing that essence, and then delivering a new law and new social teachings so that humanity could advance.
And the newness has to do more with the current, you know, the present generation in their cultural time, the newness of the message.
Right.
They're not the same people as 2,000 years previous.
Right.
There are a lot
Mankind
of other things affecting
evolved,
them now.
Has evolved and is ready for more of a message, and therefore what's delivered to mankind in 1844, 1863 would be something different from what man would have received in, 600 A.D. or at the time of Moses or at the time of Christ.
And that's an interesting time in history because many things were going on around the world at that time, during the latter part of that, 1860, 1865 is our civil war here.
Right.
And a lot of it about slavery.
Right.
Does that sound like a pertinent time then for that message?
Yes. The spirit of this revelation of Baha'u'llah, I'll just give you a couple of examples. When this revelation was released into the world, there was a major conference of these early followers of the Bab, at which the whole concept of the spiritual equality of women and men was discussed, and the subject of a conference in 1848 in Persia. That was also the date of the Seneca Falls Conference in New York.
That's right.
Where women in this country were waking up to that whole notion of their equality and the importance of the vote. And so the spirit of this the advancement of women in this new age really can be traced to 1848 and beyond.
Now, the Baha'i specifically focus as part of their mission on the establishment of world peace, the equality of women and men, racial unity, and spiritual transformation, yes?
Yes.
And that is part of that specific message that came during that time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now,
it also, you know, given the importance of the elimination of racial prejudice at a time when Baha'u'llah, which, by the way, in Arabic, Baha means glory and Allah means God, so the title of the prophet founder, Baha'u'llah, means the glory of God. When Baha'u'llah was proclaiming his mission in 1863 of this, the basic concept of the oneness of all humanity, the equality of all men and women before God, was exactly the time in this country when Lincoln was issuing the Emancipation Proclamation and the freeing of the slaves was in progress. So, again, the spirit of this age being one of basically of unity began to find its manifestations in the material world, you know, from that those dates forward. And later on, when we discuss science and religion, you can also see from the 1840s on forward a tremendous development in science and scientific experimentation, scientific research, and, you know, the beginnings of some sciences as well.
Mm. Can you share a little more of the story of the founder, Baha'u'llah's, his life story in general?
Right, right. He was born into a wealthy family in Persia, but when he heard of this new message, the message that the Bab had brought, he left his position and joined the followers of the Bab. Because the early Babis were proclaiming the fulfillment of the promises of the Quran, and because they were proclaiming the spiritual equality of women and men at that time in Persia, they were imprisoned, they were tortured, they were martyred, their properties were confiscated, and so 20,000 of the followers of the Bab were martyred at that time. Baha'u'llah was imprisoned, and he survived the imprisonment and the torture, and then was finally exiled from Iran to Baghdad. In Baghdad, he lived for a period of 10 years, and in 1863, Baha'u'llah proclaimed that he was the promised one that the Bab had announced was coming. From that time, he was then further exiled to what was then part of the Ottoman Empire, to Constantinople, to Adrianople. And then finally, the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire exiled him and his followers to Palestine. There was a prison colony there called Akka. That's today, the Israelis call it Akko. And the Baha'is were, those early Baha'is were imprisoned there with Baha'u'llah, with his eldest son, Abd al-Baha, for more than 40 years in that area. And yet, in spite of this successive banishment and exile of Baha'u'llah, the Baha'i faith continued to grow from Iran and Iraq, then into Egypt, then into Europe, and then into the United States. And none of the oppression and suffering that they went through succeeded in extinguishing it, as the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire and the Shah of Persia had hoped. So that's, you know, kind of a quick thumbnail sketch from the early beginnings. The Baha'i faith now has been spread around the world. There are 183 countries and territories that have national administrative bodies administering a global Baha'i community. And according to the Encyclopedia Britannica, the Baha'i faith is now the second most widespread religion in the world after Christianity, because it has been, you know, taken by Baha'i pioneers, which Baha'i teachers who've left their own country to go to other countries. It's been taken around the world.
In the West here, in America in particular, we, because of our relationship these days, we wouldn't normally consider that the prophet of all racial and gender and spiritual unity would be coming from, you know, an area of the world like, you know, Persia or Baghdad, and yet this is the oneness of humankind is a pivotal principle of his revelation.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share more about that oneness?
Well, the basic notion of oneness is that all humanity is one, that our communities, our global community needs to be built on the basis of this equality of all the races, religions, equality of women and men. And so when we think about the institutions which we are building and which we are serving, we use this whole concept of the oneness of humankind as the basic principle. In the United States, since it was introduced here in 1893, the Baha'i community has been a multiracial community. And because of that, has gone through, cross burnings and buses being shot at and homes being burned, along with, the sufferings of black people who have, been demonstrating and asserting their right to be treated as equal. And so,
do you know where the first Baha'i were in America? Where did they come?
The first Baha'is were in the Chicago area and in the New York area, and actually here in Elliott, Maine. Elliott, Maine was kind of because of the Greenacre Conference Center being here, and the fact that the visionary woman who founded the Greenacre Conferences in 1894, she became a Baha'i in 1900. This area, Elliott, Maine, became a major Baha'i center as well. Eventually, a decision was made in 1909 to establish the Baha'i National Headquarters near Chicago in Wilmette, Illinois, and that's where the first Baha'i House of Worship was built and is now, you know, our main National House of Worship, and our national headquarters is in Wilmette, Illinois. But the early communities were Elliott, Maine, Boston, Massachusetts, Washington, D.C., New York City, Chicago. There were early Baha'is out on the West Coast, San Francisco, Los Angeles. And then, you know, little by little, there are now Baha'is in every state of the Union, and, over in each local community where we have nine adult men and women, we elect a governing body called the Spiritual Assembly. And since we're a lay religion, this group of nine men and women, you know, govern the affairs of that local community, organize the children's classes, organize the community devotions, the public meetings, and also perform a pastoral function as well.
You said earlier that the Baha'i perceive the succession of divine messengers through history you know, Moses, Buddha, Jesus, etc. And it brings to mind perhaps a perception as religions not pitted against each other as they usually are, with a lot of fighting against each other and as well as infighting among themselves, but rather religions as a succession of revelations, which of course is a very different way of looking at things.
Yeah.
In the world. Can you say a little more about that?
Well, I was doing a little reading, you know, to see if what I could find about this topic, and if I could just
sure.
give you a couple of short quotes from the writings of Abdu'l-Bahá, who was the son of the Prophet founder. He wrote, "God sends prophets for the education of the people and the progress of mankind. Each such manifestation of God has raised humanity.
Hmm.
They serve the whole world by the bounty of God. The sure proof that they are the manifestations of God is in the education and progress of the people. All the teaching of the prophets is one faith, one divine light shining throughout the world. Now, under the banner of the oneness of humanity, all people of all creeds should turn away from prejudice and become friends."
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, in the Christian community, for example, I don't know if you've experienced any persecution at all, but of course that, you know, Christ is the fulfillment, past, present, and future. Course might be, you know, something that might be causing a problem for in your faith among your believers. I don't know. Perhaps you might share that. But I remember I recall an experience when I was studying at Mary Knoll, of course, this great missionary society, the Mary Knoll fathers, brothers, and sisters around the world, and they were discussing this concept of the mission field sort of changing. And moving a little bit away from what was Christocentric, as in going to a place to convert them, you know, to a different religion with a, you know, name of a different god. And a sister told me in particular of her years in Japan, after her term there, which, you know, perhaps 3, 4, 5 years as a missionary, and coming back, you know, she was preparing to come back to the United States. And someone in her community came to her from a place of very, very deep, earnest gratitude and thanked her as a Catholic nun for helping her to become a much better Buddhist. And whereas some people might have thought that was a failure, Sister Jerry took that to heart as a great success.
Yeah.
Because perhaps if we dig down deeper into all our faiths around the world, perhaps we do wind up at the same place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What do you think?
You know, I think that's a very very good example. And you know, this whole concept of service, you know, as your friend went out to, you know, serve the people of Japan, you know, that service can take many forms, and its effect, you know, really it's hard to calculate, you know. We often find that in discussions that we've had with people of other faiths, you know, just the sharing that we that we do will end up educating both of us, you know. The Baha'i will be better educated, and the Christian will be better educated, and will become stronger in faith as a result of their encounter. So I think that another one of the teachings that we are given by Baha'u'llah is that he says, consort with the peoples of all religions in a spirit of friendliness and fellowship. And really was very emphatic in his writings that we don't use religion to divide us or to separate us. You know, because the whole purpose of religion, which comes from the the word religion comes from the Latin, you know, re ligare. It means to connect, to bring together, you know. And this is really the true purpose of religion, and really the purpose of one who wants to be of service to God and to humanity, in our view, would be, you know, working toward this kind of unity and equality in the world.
And in many ways, that goes from moving beyond an ideology to something involving more of the heart and compassion in dialogue. Where is it going, Jim? What is the ultimate vision, let's say, for the Baha'i faith? What would the world look like?
Where it's going is the elimination of war. You know, that's one of the aspects of this new global community that we're all, you know, envisioning and working toward. You know, that would be that would be one aspect. And then once resources are no longer devoted to warring, you know, nations warring against each other, then the development of science and technology and art, you know, to make our lives richer and better, will be, all of those resources will be used for that that vision. We are, in our view, you know, we are headed for a world commonwealth, and again, I have another quote that does refer to that in the sense that, you know, it implies the establishment of a world commonwealth in which all nations, races, creeds, and classes are closely and permanently united, and in which the autonomy of its state members and the personal freedom and initiative of the individuals that compose them are definitely and completely safeguarded. So this would be a world commonwealth, a federated world commonwealth, where, you know, to the focus on our spiritual development would be given equal, if not greater emphasis than our focus on our material development and our technological development. And we would have all the resources of all the countries of the world to devote to that spiritual and social advancement.
But it sounds, for something like that to happen, that kind of transformation, there were some pretty serious barriers that have to be, if not broken, at least softened across many lines, geographically, culturally, nationally, spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that would happen over time?
Oh, yes. Yeah. This is definitely a gradual process. Interesting that there was a letter some years ago that our supreme governing body, the Universal House of Justice, addressed to the religious leaders of the world, and in which they pointed out that if you look at this issue of the equality of women and men, at the advancement of women, the education of women, the participation of women in professions and trades, you can see, you know, progress has been made over the past decades and centuries. If you look at the question of the education and the human rights and civil rights of people of color throughout the world, you can also see progress. And so these are two of the, as we see it, the building blocks to a peaceful world, are the equality of women and men and the elimination of racial prejudice. The other foundation block of that progress toward world peace, the elimination of religious prejudice, is one that our House of Justice addressed to the religious leaders of the world and asked the religious leaders to come together, you know, in a spirit of dialogue and humility, and to work to eliminate and lessen, you know, those barriers that divide the religions from each other, because that also is an important building block in the process of you know, achieving a peaceful world.
Yes, it is. Thank you, Jim. It's time now. We're going to take a short break, but please stay with us. After the break, we'll be back, and we'll also open the phone lines. The call-in number again is 888-873-4643. We like to showcase new and interesting music on Godspeed. This piece is called Sultan Tunis by the composer Ben Osman from his album Arabica Point 2. Welcome back to Godspeed on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm your host, Carol Hallenbeck. We're talking with Dr. James Succo of the Baha'i School in Elliott, Maine, about the Baha'i faith. Jim, you mentioned earlier that the Baha'i is a lay religion.
Yes.
Could you give us a little insight into the practices, the meetings, how the lifestyle is lived out? How is the spirituality actualized among communities and family?
Yes, there a Baha'i community. Let's take, for example, Elliott, Maine. Once a year, there's an election of 9 men and women from the Baha'i community who are 21 years of age or older, because these are incorporated bodies. These 9 form what's called the Local Spiritual Assembly of the Baha'is of Elliott, Maine. This assembly organizes the meetings and activities of the Baha'i community of Elliott. And the major meetings are the getting together for worship and what we call consultation, or kind of a town meeting of a high town meeting is called a 19-day feast. It's not a banquet. It's usually held in a local Baha'i center or held in a home, and people come together for a devotional portion, which is prayers and readings from the sacred writings of the Baha'i faith. Then there's a period of community consultation. We talk about what we'd like to do, what the families are doing, how the children's classes are going, how the youth activities are going. It's kind of an open consultation time. And then there's a social time where people, you know, have cookies and juice and coffee and, you know, kind of get together. This is done, you know, once every 19 days, which is the course of a Baha'i month. In addition, communities will usually organize classes for the spiritual education of the children, and these usually go on a weekly basis. There'll be some kind of public meetings, open meetings, where people who want to learn more about the Baha'i faith can come and, you know, meet in somebody's home. There are also a series that's actually on a worldwide basis of a sequence of studies having to do with topics like life after death, like prayer, like this whole question of how do you read the Baha'i writings and then put them into action? How do you live a Baha'i life, as we put it? Those are, you know, also held. And then there's a whole variety of other kinds of meetings and get-togethers that a community can organize. Sometimes we'll establish, for example, recently when there was the earthquake in Haiti, we offered our facilities here at the Green Acre Baha'i School for a meeting of prayers for the people of Haiti. And, you know, people from Elliott as well as people from the Elliott Baha'i community, you know, attended that meeting and shared in the prayers. So that's kind of what community life is about. The other question that you asked, which is probably the pivotal question, is, you know, how does a Baha'i take what's in the scriptures and, you know, make that a part of his or her life? And, you know, we have a form of daily obligatory prayer, as well as many other prayers revealed by Baha'u'llah and Abdu'l-Baha for the purpose of focusing our attention on the spiritual life. We try to meditate every day so we can think about, you know, how can I take this teaching about love and, you know, make it more a part of my life? How can I take the teaching about generosity and make that, you know, more a part of our life? It's kind of a it's called bringing thyself to account each day. You know, how am I doing when I look at the standard of these virtues and divine qualities which are given to me in these writings? How am I doing as far as having my life, you know, conform to these moral standards?
For the Baha'i, it's quite a task, or perhaps even command, to work through the gender and race issues mm-hmm. that we have. In some ways, they're kind of like spiritual final frontiers. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
By
right.
that,
yeah.
So that is a challenging and amazing, you know, goal as part of daily life of faith and the vision of faith. One of the ways in which the Baha'i are very much in tune with the modern world has to do, to me, with the relationship between faith and science and technology, which are also, they also tend to be at odds. You know, we always hear of the endless debates between science and religion and creationism and evolution, and again, these things tend to be pitted against each other. In the Baha'i, they seem to go hand in hand. And can you share a little bit about the relationship there with faith, science, and the modern world?
Maybe I can, just put it this way. In terms of, one analogy that's used is that religion and science are like two wings of a bird, and that in order for humanity to progress, we need to have both of these wings be strong. So we're, in our community activities, our institutions encourage all Baha'is to seek education and to not only to seek education but to excel to the extent that we can in all, fields of education and science. I was mentioning to you the other day, Carol, that this series of seminars entitled Science, Religion, and Development, and one of the projects I was reading about was one in Colombia in South America, where a group of university professors was working with villages on how to promote, progress in the village, but to do it on the basis of what the village elders and the village governing councils, were directing, rather than it being directed from a top-down, from a government, the capital of the national government down. And they put together a wonderful curriculum of, animal husbandry, of soil chemistry, and actually put together a high school level science curriculum for not only the high school students to have, but village members to have. And in the report, one of the authors said that, the prejudice against the rural people is you can't teach them science, they won't learn it. But what they found was when you're putting science education in the context of I'm studying animal husbandry because this is part of what my whole village is doing to advance, people certainly could learn science and really learn it at a very good at a good pace. So we also another example might be that in our own approaching the question of health and medicine, of course, medicine has come a long way and has a long way to go, but we take the position that if I'm sick, I should go to a doctor and seek the best medical treatment I can get, but at the same time I shouldn't ignore the spiritual side of healing, and I should be praying and meditating on the writings and the prayers that have to do with health. So you balance your pursuit of and your use of science and scientific advancement, while at the same time keeping that in a spiritual perspective.
A best of both worlds, as it were, using mm-hmm. every tool possible to move forward.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, were you raised in the Baha'i faith, or did you come to it in your life?
No, I actually, I was actually raised a Catholic, and then at the time of back to the Vietnam War, which is of course many years ago, as a young man, I was looking for how does this country and how does the world achieve peace. That's when I first came across the Baha'i faith, when I was a graduate student at Stanford. One of my professors was a Baha'i. And that's where I started going to Baha'i meetings and reading, Baha'i books and asking questions. And, I was also interested in other, types of approaches, more, nonviolence, Gandhi style and Martin Luther King style. The more I interacted with the Baha'is, and I became sort of intellectually satisfied that the Baha'i plan for peace was a plan which offered a good possibility of success and of systematic and gradual, you know, movement toward peace. But then it took a kind of another period of time where I had to deal with the whole aspect of, you know, going to Baha'i prayers and learning to pray again, so to speak, and, you know, dealing with the whole mystical and spiritual aspect of the Baha'i teachings, which the more I delved into that aspect, the more I, you know, I found comfort and I found joy, you know, in the spiritual teachings. And so from both a spiritual and intellectual viewpoint, I was, you know, satisfied of the truth of the Baha'i faith, which, as I said before, for me, I was on a search for the essential Christianity, the essential Islam, and that's really what I found was I found an essence, and then I found a spiritual path that had to do with unity and peace, which from my studies I had, you know, come to have an interest in contributing my life toward you know, those grander goals of achieving world peace.
Jim, how long have you been the co-administrator of the Baha'i School in Elliott, Maine? And can you tell us something about the school and the programs and events you offer?
Yeah. My wife and I have been the co-administrators here since October of 1995, so we've been here about 14 and a half years. The school offers courses on a year-round basis. From September to June offers weekend courses, and then from about mid-June to Labor Day offers week-long courses. These courses,
and are those courses studies in the faith and particular components?
Yes, I mean the the courses can deal with. You mentioned this whole subject of the unity of the races. Well, we coming up in June, we devote a weekend to a course on, you know, building multiracial communities, the challenges involved in building multiracial communities. We have a women's retreat coming up in April where the women get together and look at, you know, the contribution that they're making, you know, to the development of healthier communities and families. We have a...
You have something going on this weekend as well, after the show.
Oh, yeah.
Which is on, what's that subject?
Well, the subject there is really the whole concept of the oneness of humankind, but the presenter is a gentleman named Kevin Locke from South Dakota. He's a Lakota Sioux, and he will be telling stories from the Sioux tradition. He will be playing the flute, and he'll be leading some circle dances. Kevin is actually been. He told me last night he's actually given presentations in 75 countries, and has visited 90 countries around the world. And he's been the United States State Department uses him as a cultural ambassador.
Mm.
So this afternoon from 3 to 4, he's giving this program on the oneness of humanity here at the Green Acre Baha'i School.
And I think you mentioned you're having a retreat for married couples?
Yes. We have every February, somewhere around Valentine's Day, we we offer a weekend retreat for married couples. And so... couples come from around the Northeast and around the country and study. There's, you know, an extensive material, you know, from the Baha'i writings about marriage and family, and so they read and discuss those writings. but also they look at the, you know, the scientific studies that have been done, mainly having to do with, you know, what are some of the characteristics you see in stable marriages, and what are some of the characteristics you see in marriages which are not stable. So it looks at some of the scientific research as well as the spiritual underpinnings of marriage. And I was just with some of the couples who were delighted with the outcome of the weekend. And this is an important part of, you know, of building unity, is to have unified families and unified marriages.
I imagine that would begin in the home, yes?
Yes.
Unity, and then sort of rippling out from there. So I imagine
right.
It would begin at home with husband, wife, and then as parents and children, beginning with unity in the home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then rippling out to the communities. Now, you have been married quite a long time, haven't you? Yourself.
Yes, actually, my wife and I are going to be, this September, we'll be celebrating our 40th wedding anniversary.
Well, congratulations. You're obviously doing something right.
Thank you. Thank you.
And helping others as well. Jim, can you tell people how they can learn more about the Baha'i and your organization? Where should they go?
Okay, there's a telephone number that's a national 800 line, and that number is 1-800-22-UNITE.
And is there a website for your school, perhaps?
The website for the Greenacre Baha'i School and Conference Center is www.greenacre. There's no S on the end, and it's all one word, greenacre.org. And that gives the listing of the programs that are going on here. And then there's a national website for, you know, introductory information on the Baha'i faith. That's www.bahai.us. And that will give, general information about the history and the principles and the current activities of the Baha'i community in the United States and around the world.
Very good. I want to thank you very much for joining us today, Jim. And I know you have to go now to open your next event.
Right, right.
And but I did want to thank you for sharing about the Baha'i and the teachings and the basic core principles of the faith, its goals and vision. Thank you very much, and I want to wish you a great day.
Perhaps we can talk again in the future about other topics.
Thank
you for continued success and your wonderful work with the Godspeed Institute.
Oh, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. You're very welcome.
And thank you for joining us today on Godspeed on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm your host, Carol Hallenbeck. Our guest today was Dr. James Sacco of the Greenacre Baha'i School in Elliott, Maine. Our engineer was John Calabro in the New York studio of the Progressive Radio Network. For more information, please visit www.godspeedinstitute.com. We'll be back next Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for another spiritual journey. Until then, Godspeed.